On this 4th of July Eve, 1955, it's most timely to ask the question, is American freedom in danger? Today our discussion is based in part on a provocative article in the inaugural issue of the new Know the Facts magazine, which states that government loyalty and security procedures have been the center of violent controversy and the most bitterly challenged of all government programs. And today it's a good time to check up on not only this aspect, but all freedoms as set down in the Bill of Rights. Our guests are four distinguished members of the United States Senate, who are eminently qualified to discuss the subject of freedom. Well, Senator, isn't the point in dispute one of the protection of the individual liberties and freedoms of Americans? Are you pleased and satisfied with these safeguards as expressed in the legislation proposed in the Hill, Senator Humphrey? Is that going to take care of individuals' freedoms?
Well, let me just say this. First of all, my complaint about the present security program is the fact that it isn't a program. That's number one complaint. It's about 25, 35, 40 programs, all operated separately, in each and every department under separate rules and regulations without any way of having any coordination that's really effective between the several departments. Now, I have in my hand here a book of hearings that we held on Senate Joint Resolution 21. This book is over 1,300 pages long. It's the first compilation of all the rules and regulations pertaining to security. And you start on page here 736, or 740, I think it is, and you'll see from that much on, those are the security regulations of the government of the United States. The first 700 pages deals with hearings that we held. And I think it's fair to say that the Department of Defense has one set of security regulations, the Atomic Energy Commission another. Even under the Espionage Acts, they're not alike. For example, if you take a picture on the Department of Defense properties, why, you are subject to the espionage penalties. But if you take a picture on the atomic installation properties, you are not. Now, what I'd like to get at is a uniform security program where the standards are relatively uniform, where there is a central body that can coordinate these digressions which you might have, and then also to establish review and procedures wherein if an innocent individual is accused, he has every opportunity to clear himself. And may I say that in some departments that's done. Take, for example, the Atomic Energy Commission. And gentlemen, I think you'll agree with me that there is no more sensitive installation in the world than our atomic energy plants. Yet every employee of that plant is entitled to a hearing. Every employee is entitled to confrontation of witnesses. Every employee is entitled, even when he applies for a job and is denied, a hearing, even on the matter of what we call job applicants. Now, there's a good reason for this, because today you have literally millions of people in this country that have dossiers or files built up on them that can plague them for the rest of their lives, never to be able to get a job in government or private industry unless they can clear their record. Now, may I make it clear? If they're guilty, they ought not to be employed. If they're guilty of disloyalty, a security risk, well, you may be a security risk for many reasons. We had a gatekeeper at a Veterans Administration hospital that was declared a security risk and lost his job. Now, I think you gentlemen would agree with me that that isn't much of a security position to be a gatekeeper at a VA hospital.
Senator, may I interrupt to make this point? Seems to me that every American feels he should have a hearing when he's accused of anything.
Correct. And he should.
Why is it then, gentlemen, that we haven't had such safeguards in the past?
Well, we do have some.
Let's Senator Casey.
It seems to me it's very understandable how this present situation arrived, how we arrived at it. This started by trying to deal with particular problems one by one as they came up and came on us in a hurry. And we had one in the Defense Department, and then we had the Atomic Energy Commission, and then there were many others that came along. And so there are differences in the way agencies handle these problems. And there are differences insofar as such matters as whether a full hearing is permitted an applicant or a probationary employee as opposed to a regular employee. There are different degrees of confrontation, although I think that perhaps Senator Humphrey misspoke himself when he suggested there was complete confrontation in the Atomic Energy Commission, because you didn't mean to say that.
No, but I'm for those of what I call the FBI witnesses. That's a different proposition.
Which is one of the very difficult problems that we have. Shall the regular employees of the FBI be required to appear at a hearing before a person who is accused? And I don't think that I have heard very few people suggest that in that particular instance that should be done. But there are many other informants of the FBI, casual informants, people who tell stories about their tenants or about their fellow employees or whatnot, and a real question exists as to whether in balance, on balance, we should not require casual informants, for instance, to appear and be confronted by the people who are accused. That's the kind of difficult problem that we're dealing with here.
One of the things that we need here, that the country needs, I think, and it's a statement I made on the floor of the Senate last week when I was supporting the commission legislation to set up a Hoover-type commission, what you call a Blue Ribbon Commission, to study this whole business is a recodification of all this vast number of regulations, because they're not the same. They have grown like Topsy. They've caused to meet a specific problem. Now, we've been talking a lot about the past. Now, looking to the future, I think Senator Butler has a very intriguing idea and a good one in dealing with the very tricky problem of communists working in defense plants, because regardless of what we write in our recodification for people working for the government, it's not going to apply to people working in private industry. It takes something special, something unusual. And I know the committee of which I'm a member has investigated a number of communists themselves in defense plants. The last one we had was a fellow who was inspecting a very important kind of weapon. He was a communist and recognized by former communists who had sat in the cell with him. Now, he was exposed, of course, under the law. The union then and the employer together forced him out of his job, but there are many of them tucked away, as Senator Butler has said. Right. What do we do if war comes about those folks?
Well, Senator Humphrey, if he is tucked away, then it's only because the administration has not done its duty. I want to say that there is law on the books already which permits the removal of any communist or subversive or security risk from any job that relates to any classified, confidential, or secret material or production in defense plants. I have before me, and I'm looking at it right now, gentlemen, the testimony of the present Secretary of the Army, the former Consular of the Department of Defense, Governor Brucker. And Governor Brucker made a very fine presentation before our subcommittee in the hearings. And he pointed out that in defense plant after defense plant, management itself has made it crystal clear that they would not hire a communist. And what is more, if they have one, they fire him. And furthermore, the government under the security regulations has an order that every employee in a defense plant today is cleared. Every single employee is investigated for his particular job. Now, some of those are not field investigations. They're what they call file investigations or agency investigations.
Senator Butler, sir, go ahead.
Now, I had the pleasure of having Governor Brucker before my task force of the Internal Security Subcommittee holding hearings on S-681, which is the bill that would bar these fellows from our defense facilities. Governor Brucker told me, under oath, because every witness that comes before the Internal Security Committee is under oath, that there was no law on the book to get these people out of the defense plants. Now, of course, we know that under Section 5 of the Internal Security Act, that in the event of an emergency, that we can get at these people. But that act has been on the books now since 1950. It has never been completely cleared by the courts. The Secretary of Defense has made no designation of defense facilities under it, and even if he had, it is doubtful whether we could get the people that I'm trying to get out of our defense facilities in the absence of an express law. Now, let me point this out to you. Mr. Meany, the president of the American Federation of Labor, just got back from Europe, and he made a most interesting interview to the U.S. News and World Report on page 99 of July 1st issue. And he said, don't make any mistake about it. The communist objective is still the same it has always been. There's been no change in it. The honey words are all right, but look out for them. Their objective is to get people in key. Let me read it to you.
In key positions?
Don't be taken in. The communists haven't changed any. When they talk peace, coexistence, and let's get along with everybody, they are just covering up. The game is the same. Keep boring into key labor unions. Promote strikes and stir up trouble. They not only do that, they are in the most secret defense facility where they're in a position to commit an act of espionage or sabotage at a given signal. Now, this committee study is a good thing, and I agree with it, and I'm in favor of it. But here we have an immediate problem of a hardcore communist to the knowledge of the FBI in a defense facility. The Secretary of the Army tells me under oath that he's unable to get that man out. Every man sitting at this table wants legislation to remove that man from our key facility.
Well, may I say, Senator, that there's a way that he can get out, and I want to concur with the idea that he ought not to have a job. I feel very strongly that he ought not to have a job, and so said in the hearings which I have before me. But the Secretary of Defense is responsible for the giving of contracts to defense plant facilities. And if there isn't a defense plant known communist, which the management knows and which the government knows, all the Secretary of Defense has to say to that plant is, either you get rid of that man or you don't get a contract. And Mr. Brucker testified that this was possible. But in fact, the Department of Defense, sir, has given contracts to particular companies in this country that continue to bargain with communist-dominated unions. Senator Douglas and myself introduced legislation to disbar communist-dominated unions.
Well, gentlemen, critics of the program states that the Eisenhower administration have sort of adopted a program which undermines, if it does not destroy, the security of every employee of the federal government. Do you feel this is a statement that's true in fact, Senator Humphrey?
No, I don't.
You do not?
I don't believe that that's a factual statement. I think there have been a number of people that would like to have the American people believe that the government is infiltrated by disloyal people and subversives and security risks, and that isn't a fact either. The government employees are, as a group, far above the average employee in the country. They've been screened, rescreened, and double-screened as to their security and as to their loyalty. I do feel, however, that there's been far too much demagoguery about the so-called security risk, the so-called numbers game. Many people have been dismissed from government employment that were not disloyal at all, but just were unsuitable employees, and then they've been tabulated as security risks. I think the sooner we get down to taking a look at our loyalty security program as citizens rather than as partisans, as members of Congress rather than as Republicans or Democrats, the better we're going to be off and the better the country's going to be off. We need security and freedom, and we can have both.
Senator Mundt, do you feel that's true?
I certainly do feel that it's true that we can have both security and freedom, and I also feel that it's true that there is no basis whatsoever for the criticisms which sometimes come from left-wing sources that those who now work for the government have a feeling of fear that they're going to be removed. Certainly if they're loyal, they have no cause for fear. As Senator Humphrey points out, they've been screened and rescreened, and I think they're developing a fine esprit de corps. Actually, the number is 8,008. That have been screened out of government since the Eisenhower administration has taken over. May have been some mistakes, but I dare say of the 8,008, nobody has defended 8 of the 8,008. Obviously not all security risks, obviously not all communists. Some of them were common drunks, some of them engaged in petty larceny, just as you have a great family of 2 million people working any place. Some people are unfit, and some who were fit aren't fit forever. In a job
isn't that the very point, though? Aren't people often confused in this term of security, loyalty? People wonder what these mean, these terms, security and loyalty. For instance, Senator Butler, have you found that these words confuse people, that perhaps a person is fired for inefficiency and seemingly has a label of lack of loyalty or security risk?
I don't know of any such case in the federal government. I think that in most of these cases, the persons involved have been given charges, they have had a fair hearing, and of course we make mistakes. Everybody's bound to make a mistake. You can pick up the newspaper almost every day in the week and see where some man served 2, 3, 4, 5, some 20 years
for a crime he never committed. All rules of conduct are severe on some people. We must have some type of security. We must protect the interests of the people. We're bound to make some mistakes. But I don't think that you can condemn the program. I don't think that you should condemn it. I think it is absolutely essential to the security of the country that we have some program. Now, I don't say it's perfect, but I say that we need one, and we have made a step in the right direction by appointing a commission or passing a resolution to have a commission appointed to make a complete study of all of these things.
Senator Case, may I ask you, are you satisfied with the program as it exists?
No, of course not. And I don't think anyone would say here that he is completely satisfied with this program. But I do want to say at the outset of my very brief opening remarks that I don't accept the idea that this is a partisan proposition. The program got started under a Democratic administration. It is developed in a haphazard way, necessarily, because we were dealing with a new problem and a very difficult one. And the mistakes that were made perhaps were unavoidable mistakes. But I do agree completely with Senator Butler, and I know with the rest of my colleagues, that the resolution introduced by Senator Humphrey and Senator Stennis, which passed the Senate unanimously and the House also, for a complete review of this thing is very necessary. Because we are now at the point where we can stand away and look at the impact of a very, very difficult
program, and one capable of real harm to individuals, and something that we haven't known in America until recent years. The security program does involve the possibility of innocent people being hurt, the possibility of people being hurt without their even knowing that they're under charges, because our program isn't uniform in its application, and some applicants for work, for instance, don't have notice of hearing. And it involves people being let out of a job. It involves people not being able to get another job without knowing in all cases and some kind, and perhaps quite often, who the people who have accused them of being either disloyal or otherwise a security risk are. And these things are deeply hurtful to our basic American ideas of justice. And while I don't think there are any complete answers, what we need is a better balance, it seems to me, between even better security and better protection for the individual.
Well, are you pleased with this, Senator Humphrey? This is a move toward an improvement?
Oh, I'm very definitely pleased. In a way, may I say that I think there is a better climate of opinion in America today on this whole subject of our so-called security program.
I think
we're beginning to settle down and get just a little more rational and just a little bit more objective. But, you know, one of the facts that we discovered in our hearings on the security program, and those hearings were rather voluminous, and I guess many other committees have had similar hearings, was that there had been approximately 8,000, as was mentioned here, severed from public service since 1953.
8,008.
But of that 8,008, only 3,002 were actually fired. 5,000 and some resigned. And of the total 8,008, an overwhelming majority were probationary employees, which had been hired since January 1953. The interesting thing is that there are few, if any, people that have been dismissed because they were known subversive saboteurs or communists. We have dismissed employees, as Mr. Young of the Civil Service Commission points out very pointedly. He said that only a very limited number had been dismissed under the executive order 10450.
Senator Butler.
Senator, I don't go along with the figures. I don't think the program is as bad as you would make it out. Now, the government security program, as I understand it, insofar as secret and top secret classifications are concerned, the decision there is made by the government itself.
Right.
In confidential categories, the decision is made by the employer. But the employer has no right to fire. You know that. You quoted Governor Brucker several minutes ago. And you said that Governor Brucker had said that they had a way to get these people out. Now, of course, in the defense facility, that has, or in the ordinary facility, the powerhouse that supplies the power to the defense facility, there's no way of getting a communist out of that place, or a person known by the FBI to be subversive. Of course, you can get them out and keep them out of areas where secret work is being done. But the employer has no right to fire them. If he does fire them, he's up before the NLRB for an unfair labor practice.
Of course, there is legislation already, Senator Butler, that deals with unions who are communist-dominated and communist-affiliated.
You put that on the books last year.
That
was my bill last year. I passed that legislation last year, but it doesn't touch this problem. We know that there are subversives in some defense facilities where secret work is not being carried on, but work nevertheless essential to the national defense.
Well, Senator, Chairman,
and certainly the Secretary of the Army, Governor Brucker, made that point very clear in your hearings, as he did in mine.
Senator
Mr. Chairman, in the opening part of our discussion, we mentioned the fact that there were two types of mistakes which inevitably occur in a program of loyalty in government. One is mistakes by bringing people in who should not have been brought in, and occasionally mistakes on subjecting people to embarrassment who should not be subjected to embarrassment. I went into that in an article which I wrote here for the initial issue of this interesting and provocative new magazine, Know the Facts, the July issue. And in that article, I make this statement in that connection. I think as members of the Congress, we'd all would agree to that.
You certainly deserve this chance for a plug, too.
Congressional committees usually get the lambasting when somebody criticizes his security program. So I said this: in view of the criticisms frequently made against the Congressional Investigating Committee as an institution, it should be said that no Congressional Investigating Committee in history, and probably not all of them combined, has ever made a mistake so serious in striving to get communists out of government as the mistakes made by administration officials when they permitted communists and their agents to be appointed to positions in the federal government in the first place. I think that's an all-American axiom we should keep in mind, because we don't want to have one set of mistakes wipe out the other.
I surely agree with that general axiom, Senator. But I want to ask you a question. You just name me one communist that the Eisenhower administration has fired since January 1953.
You know, I think, Senator...
I think that we got to face up to the fact that there have just been no communists fired, and yet every federal employee has been investigated. There have been people fired for cause, that because they were undesirable, 25,000.
Of course.
Wait a minute.
What is a communist?
Well, a communist is a member of the Communist Party or one who follows the doctrine of the Communist Party, Senator.
You know as well as I do that there's no such thing as a Communist Party. They don't operate that way anymore.
Well, now, Senator,
they have no cards. They have no membership.
Senator,
Let Senator Humphrey finish, sir.
The FBI can tell you and me and other members of the Senate that there are some 25,000 known communists, they must have a way of defining one. What the senator from Minnesota is saying is that since January 1953, this administration hasn't been able to find or fire a communist. They have dismissed over 3,000 people under the security program.
Senator, you have admitted over the security that 5,000 people have resigned from government service. Now, those people were under charges, a lot of them.
Many of them, not all.
There's your communists right there. They can't face up.
Well, not at all.
They're the people that won't answer the charge.
Senator, I think
they'd rather get out.
That's a broad charge to say that
we found no communists. We've gotten rid of them. They're gone.
Senator asked me a question. I'd like to be able to answer. Whether the Eisenhower administration got rid of any communists since 1953, I give you this further quotation from this Know the Facts magazine, which is taken from government records. A further breakdown gives 2,096 cases of the 8,008 whose files contained information relative to subversive associations, memberships, or activities. And I'm sure that neither the senator from Minnesota nor I want those kind of people working for the government, whether they pay dues to the Communist Party or not.
Well, if now, Senator, that's...
associated with the
that's
Communist
That's a security risk.
That's enough.
We want to differentiate between a security risk and a disloyal person.
But may I
point out that most of the security risks that have been dismissed, Senator, are probationary employees that have been hired by this administration since January 1953.
And also, we don't want known communists in our secret defense facilities.
Of course
not. And we have them there, and we should find some way right now of getting rid of them.
The senator from Minnesota wanted to outlaw the Communist Party from the procedures of labor relations
law. I must interrupt, gentlemen. Our time is up. We certainly do thank you, Senator Carl Mundt, Senator Hubert Humphrey, Senator John Butler, and Senator Clifford Case. The nation's first discussion program, the American Forum, is now in its 27th year, founded and produced by Theodore Granick. This is Steve McCormick bidding you goodbye.